Welcome to the Leading Lane Podcast for real estate pros by real estate pros with your hosts, Ashley Frederick and Stephen Birch. If you're looking for an honest, authentic, and raw perspective, you found it.
Well, welcome back, guys. And today that we're going to talk about, I think, a very hot topic, but maybe to where the focus isn't really being, you know, on at all. Right now, we're talking about the buyer agency agreements, but I think we really need to hone in more on like the buyer consultation aspect of things, right? I don't want this to focus on the NAR lawsuit and all of that. We may hit a few points, but that is not our focus today. So Ashley, obviously we've gone to a lot of trainings and everything together, a lot of different summits, conferences, whatever you want to talk about it. And it really seems that there's a lot of, I'm going to call it confusion across the country and in this industry of what is going on. So let's talk about the buyer consultation. What do you do for a buyer consultation? And maybe even define what is a buyer consultation in your mind?
Sure. So I think right now, right, everyone is focused on the actual buyer agency part of it. And I just think it's really important to take a step back because there's a step before buyer agency, in my opinion, which is the buyer consult. So when a buyer calls, right, normal questions are typically, are you working with an agent or are you pre-approved? Many times it's no to both. So then the next question I like to do is ask them to come in for a meeting. And I know that that's very probably regional as to whether that happens or not. I know a lot of people do it over Zoom, which is fine as well. And I really tell them it's just a matter for me to get to know what they're looking for and get to know about them, get to know more about them a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I want to come in. It's typically about a 20-minute consult. It really depends on each buyer. Some buyer has tons of questions. Some buyers, it's like this glazed over look of, this is not what I thought the process was going to look like. Mm-hmm. So I have a packet that I have pre-made for them that kind of goes over, you know, things to think about when you're looking at a home. But I really want them to know things that are going to come up during the part of the transaction, like inspections, appraisals, all those types of things. An important part too is letting them know, you know, which types of homes I can show them. So I've found that if I let them know, you know, from the beginning, I can show you homes that are listed by any office. Because, right, there's also a misconception that you have to work with the listing agent. So I like to put that out. And I also like to let them know from day one that, you know, we can show them for sale by owners. A lot of times, same thing. They think they just have to call that. So those are really, I've found, have saved me in that we've had that conversation up front. But then we really talk about, you know, what their search criteria is too, which I don't think a lot of people do. And once they have that pre-approval letter, we really need to hone in on that and discuss, you know, maybe they want to buy a $400,000 house, but their pre-approval is $300,000, you know, so where are we going to give and take? And where this buyer consult, I feel, comes in is it saves a lot of headaches down the road. And a buyer consult, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're a buyer's agent either. It's just that you've had a conversation with them about what does buying look like. Because a lot of people think that you go and you look at one home and you write an offer and you buy a house 30 days later. And you and I both know that that is probably furthest from the truth. Mm-hmm. So I think that those are kind of the very beginning aspect of it for me. I mean, there's definitely more to it, but how about on your end, what do you see the buyer consult as?
Yeah. So like, you know, again, I think regionally, I think it's going to be totally different, but for me, when somebody calls and says, hey, like, I want to go look at this house, I just saw it on wherever. Personally, what I do is I go because I want to meet them in person. Mm-hmm. Then I want to be able to say, cool, like, look, if this isn't the house, let's go ahead and talk about other options. Let's go ahead and discuss. Let's go back to the office, go to Starbucks, whatever it's going to be. And then I still have, you know, the packet and everything ready to go for them. And in that consult, like, it is making sure that they have a clear understanding of everything that is going to go on. And with that as well, if they're ready to move forward, let's say that, yep, they check all the boxes, they're ready to get pre-approved, or they already are. They know what they're wanting. They have their needs and wants list. Like, you have an understanding. You have that rapport. You know both of them are, you know, you both are going to be able to work with one another. That is when I bring up the fact of a buyer agency agreement, right? I want to make sure in my consult, I'm talking to them about, you know, the different portions of agency and representation and what that truly looks like. So just breaking it down for them that, all right, you know, obviously over this, you know, 20 minutes conversation so far, I have knowledge. And so if you want me to be able to represent you in a transaction, we need to discuss that and what that looks like to go forward with a buyer agency agreement. If you don't want representation, the way in our state, we have a transaction broker. So it's non-representation. It's a verbal agreement more so than anything, which I don't agree with whatsoever. I want to do a buyer agency agreement with them because with my personality, with the way that I'm speaking and being able to, you know, guide them through and provide suggestions truly, I have to be able to represent them. And this is where I think that, like, and this is all in my opinion, and you can agree with me, you can disagree with me, but yes, once you have a buyer agency agreement, they are locking in saying they're going to be working with you, but we're not having the conversations about what does that look like for compensation? Technically, you are going to be compensating me on my side for representing you, but it's my job to negotiate it from the seller side to be able to try to, you know, negotiate as much as I possibly can on your behalf to be able to go ahead and pay me, right? Like, apply that to my side. So it lessens their out of pocket. But where that gets into the lawsuit, so I'm trying to make sure that I'm staying away from that. But the portion of where people don't understand, in my opinion, is at the point of you showing, and even in the buyer consultation, like before they are doing a buyer's agency agreement, they are then just a customer, right? They're just a customer at that point. And so you can provide suggestions. You cannot really do the advising. You can't do anything else. But once you go ahead and get them to sign that buyer agency agreement, they now then become your client. And I think that there's a lot of people that really just confuse the fact like, oh yeah, you're showing them. They said that they're going to work with you. That is not your client. The client is truly once they sign and you sign with them as well for agreeing to work with one another, right? We were at a training here not too long ago, and it was talking about all of these different bullet points that you have to have in order to have a buyer client. But not one of those things on there was talking about the true buyer agency agreement between the real estate agent and then the buyers. Just because they're pre-approved, just because they have, you know, realistic expectations, you know, the two other bullet points I don't remember off the top of my head, but those were just willing and able buyers.
Correct.
So it does not just go ahead and slam dunk it that you are now going to be working with me and represent, I'm going to represent you and you're going to pay me. Mm-hmm. I think in this industry, we miss that whole big section. Yes, we want to educate everything else when we do that probably naturally, but we don't talk about the agency and the compensation, which then has now led us into this wonderful world of lawsuits that we're seeing.
Right.
So I can feel myself like getting really passionate about this, right? Like I want to jump through here and be like, come on. So
yeah. So, I mean, I agree with you that I do like to meet people the first time, like, I have one, like somebody called me this morning, right? I'm going to go meet them at a house this afternoon. It's really helpful when they have a property that they, you know, have in mind. Then I like to have the buyer consult. But if it's like the greeny, like don't even know what I can afford, like that's a really easy, hey, just come in and let's talk about it. You know, I think with that too is with the agency part of it, I mean, it's a really easy concept of like a side-by-side of what is a client and what is a customer for a buyer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you hear all these kind of horror stories where people thought that someone was working for them. And really it comes down to like a side-by-side of, you know, I can't tell you what to offer, but I could if you had an agency agreement. So I think really just sitting down and like, if we don't have an agreement, these are the things I can help you with. If we, you know, do have an agreement, these are the types of things I can help you with, which I think most people are really surprised on, because I think that most buyers just think that all agents are doing the same thing. You know, every agent that I call is going to tell me the same thing, which couldn't be further from the truth. But I think that, you know, those consults where we can solve other problems as far as, you know, talking about finding an agent that works good for you instead of calling, you know, agent A on day one and agent B on day five. And if we talk about that from the beginning, I think it causes not to have those problems down the road as to somebody, you know, thinks that they were working with someone or someone thinks they have procuring cause. If we would have had these discussions from day one, we would have prevented all of them. But I really like your point of if you've done the point of, you know, explaining your benefits and compensation, I don't think the compensation needs to be such a struggle as what we're kind of making it out to be. Because you're right, like we still have the ability to negotiate that for them. And I think that we're getting lost on that part instead of like really giving them the best advice down the road. But I think that most people, if they understand that and you do a good enough job, most people are like, I mean, well, why wouldn't we do this? Of course I want, you know, your expert opinion. Of course I'd want you to be compensated. You know, we can figure out what happens if the, you know, that's not a feasibility with the way that the listing is.
Right. I mean, like at the end of the day, like when you go in and, you know, to an attorney's office, that's the easiest way to be able to do it. Like you already know that you're going to be having to compensate this attorney, right? Like, so I don't know why we struggle so much in this industry of having that conversation up front of, cool, if we're going to move forward, this is how it's going to happen. What other industry, like I would love to find a list of things that we just assume or assumption that actually happens to be that they do their services for free. You know, we go into a doctor's office, we know that we're going to get a bill. We go into an attorney's office, we know we're going to get a bill. You order from Starbucks, you know you're going to have to pay, right? Like, so why do we devalue ourselves as individuals and not put that up on the forefront? And I really think it comes just down to lack of education, right? Mm-hmm. Which then, you know, competency equals confidence. And so if you're not competent about what is going on, you're not going to have the confidence to be able to have that discussion. But it's pretty simple, in my opinion, to be able to put this in layman's terms. If you were to go and you were to be sued and you have to go to court, are you going to want the other attorney to go ahead and represent you and who's suing you at the same time? I sure as hell don't, right? I want to get my own representation so that I know that my best interests are at mind and I have somebody on my side of the field playing for me and we're working together versus just, you know, going ahead and paying just one side. So it is very interesting how people don't want to have that conversation. I don't know about you, when I go to a listing appointment, pretty much the number one question from every seller is, what do you charge? Right? Like, what is that? And I'm very confident in being able to say, I charge, you know, this many oranges. And so at that point, they already know. And then we can talk about the value of why you pay me in oranges versus you can go somewhere else and get rotten bananas. Like however you want to be able to do it. But if you want this, and these are my value prompts, this is what I bring to the table every single time, they know that my compensation is well worth it because they see the tangible, they can see the correlation to my hard work and what I'm bringing to the table. So it's the same, like I think people should be looking at listing appointments the same way that they do buyer consultations. Like it should be the same exact over and over and over again. Just because you're not entering into their house does not mean you should not be having it. You should be able to have that conversation if it's in your office, again, at Starbucks, if it's in the parking lot on your hood, having a conversation, you know, with the documents. So it is so important. It drives me.
I think that that's just it, right? Like so many people put focus on the listing appointment and like, you know, what are you doing to prep for a listing appointment and what are you taking with you to a listing appointment? Mm-hmm. And I think it should be the same exact thing for a buyer consult. Absolutely. You know, what are you taking with you? What do you have prepped more or less? Like, what does your resume look like to have that buyer be like, man, I want them working for me. So we really do need to treat them the same. Cause then again, like there's a question of what do you charge? And I charge this many apples because this is what I can provide for you. The thing I wrote down was just, you know, you asked like, why do people skip over that, conversation, if you will. Mm-hmm. And if I have to, if I tried to think about it, I think that there's some type of fear of rejection from agents. And, I can see that. And I think about like when I first started and those were hard conversations to have, right? When you weren't that confident mm-hmm. or you didn't necessarily know how to answer those hard questions that a seller or a buyer gave you. So I think that on the flip side of that, right, there's the fear of rejection, but I'm to the point where if a buyer doesn't necessarily see my worth, right, then I'm going to move on to the next buyer that does see my worth because there are so many hours in a day and there are so many people. So I've always same thing, like, why are we cutting ourselves short? So if a buyer can't see your value, then you as an agent have to appreciate yourself and value yourself enough to move on and be like, maybe it might not be the right agent for you. And there's nothing wrong with that.
And I think it's very important to have this little point here too, is that an agreement, a contract is between the buyer and the agent, right? It's between the two of them. So during all of this, you know, discovery process, what, you know, buyer consultation, you're seeing if they're going to be a good fit for you as well, right? You then have the power and choice. I mean, maybe if people change their mindset of saying, do I want to make an agreement to actually work with this person? Or is this something that I need to go ahead and pass on because they want to undercut everything and they don't want to pay me? And, you know, like, what does that really look like in the transaction? Because mm-hmm. if that's how they're going to treat you now, and you know that they're not a good fit, but you're just going to go with it because you have commission breath, what kind of position do you think you're going to put yourself and them in the middle of the transaction? Now you have multiple other parties involved, making it so much more you know, liable out there for you to, like, yeah, it's a huge risk. So you have to have the power of belief, of understanding that you are choosing to work with that buyer. You are laying out what your expectations are of them and what they are looking for in you as well. Clear, like, you have to be crystal clear to make sure. And as, you know, over and over, just with listing and presentations, the confidence and the conversation, and as you learn that there's something like, oop, I F that up, let me go ahead and figure out, like, I need to ask this question next time. Let me alter my little, you know, questionnaire, my script, for lack of better terms, to make sure that never happens again. Like, that's what truly makes you a professional, which then provides even more value, which then gives you into your confidence that is there too. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've done a pretty good job at our office, I feel, of educating our agents about buyer agency, about buyer consults. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's always amazing when they have met a buyer that, you know, has maybe gone to multiple open houses or has contacted multiple listing agents. And then they get to one of our agents and our agents asks them about, you know, buyer agency. And it's just a deer in the, mm-hmm. you know, like, and they have never heard of it, and they've maybe already talked to three agents. And that's the same thing that concerns me, is if other agents, you know, aren't taking the time to really get to know these buyers, like, how are we truly helping them? As right. you said, I like the commission breath. If that's what is really the case, like, we're not helping anybody. Like, we're supposed to be, you know, putting our time and effort into somebody's home that they're going to shelter in, that they're going to have, you know, ups and downs. Like, that's not just a 2-minute conversation. It's sometimes, I mean, I've had buyers, I think, that we worked together for 5 years before they bought a house. I mean, we were basically like family at that point in time, you know? But again, it's because we had the mutual understanding that I knew that they were going to work with me regardless. They knew that I was trying to find them the best home for their family. So it's the give and take on both sides. My question for you is, how do you feel about like the ABR designation or the accredited buyer's representation?
Like, I'm certified to teach it, and so I'm huge. I sent one of our market managers to get certified to be able to teach these designations as well, specifically the ABR. because I think it's so crucial for people to be able to know what is going on. This is a forever changing industry, and we're watching it, history being made right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, like literally right now happening. And so I think I believe that we have 95% of our agents within our office ABR certified. The 5% are like the few people that joined within the last couple of months. But we have another training coming up in April, if I remember correctly, that we're going to be presenting as well. NAR right now has a lot of different incentives to be able to do it on a virtual level. I never really thought that I would be quote unquote the alphabet soup type of person that has all these different, you know, letters, acronyms after my name, but there's a reason for them. Like, you have to be able to, again, if you want to level up in this industry, you have to level yourself up, and that starts with the education and professional development. So huge, yeah. Huge.
I agree with that. I think you and I are both certified to teach the ABR course. I did do one in January. And the point that I wanted to make with that is that was an office one. So 5 more of our agents will have their ABR certifications. So same thing, I think we'll be at 90-some percent, except for the 2 brand new agents. And the interesting thing was there were agents in that group that have also been agents for 15 years. Another one was 10 years, and they have never done buyer agency, which that's fine. That's the way that they were, you know, taught into the industry. But for me to hear them take away so much, or just say like, never thought about it that way. To me, even if someone you take the course, and then there are other things that you have to do in order to get your actual certification, which I think it's 5 closed ABR transactions and then an elective. Even if somebody doesn't want the ABR designation, I feel like attending the class itself, mm-hmm. you would be so much more knowledgeable and prepared for what is coming down the pipe. That if you are considering a designation and you're not sure, I hear that all the time from my agents, like, you know, there's, like you said, an alphabet soup of designations. Which one should I look at? And I always say ABR first. And a great elective to that, I think, is the real estate negotiating. Mm-hmm. Like RENE, I think.
Yeah. And then we're right next to a military base. So, you know, having the MRP, like the military relocation professional, like if we're primarily dealing with people that are in the service doing VA loans, like that is a huge portion of our transactions. Like, how are you really truly serving them and working in their best interest if you haven't even taken the basics of education to work with these type of people? It's the same concept on the buying side. Mm-hmm. How do you expect to be able to provide the value, right? I wrote down a question for you.
Okay.
When you and I first started working together, I had this wonderful thing called a buyer estimate of cost. Mm-hmm. And you were like, I think it was like WTF. What is that? Talk to me about that. What was the feeling on the estimate of cost from the buying side? That, let me clarify real quick, just so that everybody knows. We do it's an Excel spreadsheet, a buyer estimate of cost of what the buyer is to expect in the transaction. So we're laying everything out. We're not just relying on what the lender is saying. We do the numbers on the front end to do an estimate to make sure that we are articulating it properly as well. So there you go. Cue it up to you.
So yes, I might have been WTF.
And that's okay, right? Like, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. And I think the way that, so I really, really appreciated it because, again, when a lender is involved too, like, I don't necessarily know what the lender has told the buyer. And I also have found that some lenders, we don't tell them everything mm-hmm. that I think that they have. So if we can educate the buyer from day one as to what their estimated costs are at closing, so whether that's their closing costs, are they buying down any points, what is their down payment, those types of things, then one, they should be way more comfortable when a property does come on that they know, like, yep, we've already talked about this, I'll need $10,000 for closing day versus you get an offer, they go to the lender. The lender's like, oh, so by the way, that's going to equal about 10,000. And then mm-hmm. the buyer's like, yeah, so I don't have that. Mm-hmm. But I think the light bulb for me was that we do this for our sellers. Mm-hmm. So every single time I take a listing, we give an estimated net proceeds sheet. So same thing. There's no questions as at the end of the day, what they're walking away with. It's a great time if we figure out, you know, where they're HELOCs or those types of things that needed to be accounted for. So the light bulb for me was, we do it for sellers. Like, why aren't we doing it for buyers? Mm-hmm. And I brought it up to the office. And I think same thing. Everyone was like, huh, never thought about that. Mm-hmm. So we reached out to two of our local lenders and two of our title companies just mm-hmm. to, because obviously the title work comes into play here too, as to what their average costs were. So thank you for the reminder. We needed to finalize that. Mm-hmm. But again, I think this is where being open to other people, you know, one, like looking into your business, or two, giving you different ideas. Like there's so many things that change our office by, you know, conversations we've had and others. And that's one of the great ones, especially that conversation came up way before any of the current situation came up. So, you know, kudos to your office for already having that in place. But I think that that's fantastic if there's agents or brokerages that aren't using that, a way to really level up.
Absolutely. You know, when I was early on in my career, like I always forgot to tell my buyers about the earnest money when it was actually due, right? Like, yeah, we negotiated it, right? But I wasn't like, here, hand me over the check right now. And, you know, it would be day four and I'd be like, oh, I haven't gotten that from my buyer. I need to get that. I have one day to get it, you know, and it kind of creates a spiral effect, because then, you know, we talk about inspections, but do we talk about how much those inspections truly cost? You know, like, what about all these other inspections that you can be doing? We only talk about whole home inspection, but what about a septic or the sewer inspection, radon, termite, roof? I mean, like, we can go on and on and on and on of all of these different things. But if a buyer was not educated that those were options and you did not educate them, and there happens to be a sewer issue later on, and you didn't make that suggestion to them, but you had the knowledge to be able to provide that to them, do you think that you might be liable for fault here? You know, I don't know. I don't know how far a buyer would be willing to take that. But I truly believe that when you work with a buyer or seller, your negotiations, your first negotiations start with that client, right? Like, you want to, like, the way that I do it on that net sheet, estimate of cost, whatever you want to call it right now, I basically want to give them worst case scenario. Hey, these are everything that could come about. Now it's my job to negotiate this line item, this line item, this line item. Let's see what's important. Let's go through it. So at least they know everything, right? Then now when we're actually in negotiations, it's easier to cross lines out instead of adding things up for them at that point. So I truly believe that negotiations start with your client first, then it goes to the other party that you're going up against. It's just crazy to me and mind-boggling. And at that point too, like, when you are going to negotiate for your buyer, if you're asking for seller concessions, how in the hell do you know what to ask for? Right? Like, what if we were talking about the, we're just going to say, well, the lender said, I mean, I've had lenders charge astronomical origination fees, right? Like crazy fees that they say, oh no, I don't have origination, but it ends up on a different line item that goes back to them. So I want to make sure that they know these different things, you know, all up front. And if I can save them a couple $1,000 by looking at a different lender, just because I feel like there's a number that's off there, imagine how much more buying power or negotiating power that I can give the buyer and getting them into their home that they truly want to be.
Well, and imagine how much that means to that buyer, right? Like, they're going to remember that you saved them $2,000 or $3,000 whenever that time comes to sell again, 3 or 5 years down the road.
Right. And that's exactly where my next point was. Buyers turn into sellers, right? So you have to think that, like, okay, if this is an interview for a future listing, now would I be acting a little bit differently? Would I be presenting myself in a different manner or providing more education to these buyers? Because when they turn around and want to sell that house in that 5, 10 years, whatever it's going to be, you want them to remember that Ashley truly, you know, saved me that $2,000 or $3,000, and she explained everything. Now we're more mature, we have more education, and hopefully more equity into the house and that we're going to sell. I want to cash out on that. So who mm-hmm. better to represent me than Ashley? Because mm-hmm. I want to make sure that I'm going to get the most money out of and make it the easiest transaction possible.
That's funny that you say that. You know, I think it just doesn't have to do with cost, right? It has to do with anything that you do in that transaction for the buyer. So I had a buyer that they're buying the property, and we did the final walkthrough, and I think there was like a huge not attached workbench in the garage, and then like this really funky bar in the basement that they just left. And like, I could just see on his face that he was super deflated about they were going to have to figure out how to get rid of it, you know, whatever. So I think our like walkthrough was at like 5, closing was the next day. I called this certain handyman that I know. And we took the bar out of the basement at 9 o'clock at night, and we took the workbench out of the garage. Mm-hmm. I didn't say a word. You know, we went to closing mm-hmm. and he like text messaged me later and was like, I cannot believe you had that done. Great, right? We're great friends. They go and buy a second home not too recently out of the area. And he said that they did the final walkthrough and there was stuff everywhere. And that agent was just like, well, I mean, it is what it is. And he was like, just like they didn't leave it. Like the Ashley Frederick expectation was like way up here. So I was super upset that nothing was taken care of. Right. So the fact that they remembered that from like 6 years ago, right. Just goes to prove that those little things that you're doing for your buyers really do matter.
Absolutely. But do you think that if you didn't know him on that level and had that rapport, that you would have picked up that cue? I mean, you might have, but a person pick up a cue of like the uncomfortable, that something wasn't right, because they weren't comfortable enough to say it at that moment, because, you know, we're backed into a corner. But right? if you didn't
have being in tune, like you have to be in yeah. tune with it. It's not like a, you know, oh, just here for 5 minutes, see you later.
Right, right. You're doing things with intention. And right. if you're working in your client's best interest on their behalf, you're always going to be working in, you know, with intention. So it's absolutely huge. And, you know, from the very beginning of a phone call saying, hey, let's meet. We're not even talking about the safety here. Hey, a stranger's calling me. I'm going to go look at this house. It's, you know, 6 o'clock at night. It's dark out already. And I have no clue who I'm meeting. Like, what kind of safety issues are you putting yourself into? Like, no, let's at least meet the person. Like, let's make sure that everything lines up and jives up. Like, you want to make, you know, that you are not putting yourself at risk. And you hate to think that way, but we live in a world that you have no idea what is going on out there or what's going on with this other person. But you hear those horror stories that are out there constantly. And so this just even protects yourself one bit more, or at least trying to not put yourself in harm by just saying, hey, come down to the office and let's chat for a little bit. And then we can come up with an action plan from there. If they're completely resistant to it and they don't want to do it and they say, go right now, maybe that's a little bit of a red flag that we shouldn't be ignoring, right? Like, let's not even worry about the commission and the monies and everything else about all of this, the transaction. Let's worry about your freaking life.
Yeah. Like, you want to come home at the end of the day.
Yeah. So there you go. Like, the simplest thing to do a buyer consultation equals safety, hopefully for yourself, and having a peace of mind that you're actually working with somebody that is sane.
Well, and a super easy app, if you don't have, is the Forewarn app. So like our association offers that, but if yours doesn't, it's a simple download. So it's Forewarn. And you can just put in someone's phone number mm-hmm. and it'll tell you like their name, their location, et cetera. So there was two times when I did that and it was like nothing. It wasn't the name that they gave me. It wasn't the location that they gave me. So I called them back and lo and behold, like no one ever answered. And I didn't go to that appointment and I never heard back. So mm-hmm. funny how that works. You know, we live in small town USA for us, it's a little bit of Facebook stalking before I go. But right. I mean, if there's like, appearance of this buyer is like nowhere to be found on the internet, there might be a red flag. Mm-hmm. So those are all, you know, things too in a buyer consult, is making sure that your safety is at hand. And I don't know if you guys have a code word, but we do in our office, just so that if we are out on a showing or a listing, you know, obviously you're going into strangers' homes, that there's always something, if we were to call the office, that would indicate to them that something's not right. So if you don't have one for your office, definitely consider it.
Very, very smart. And on our app that we have for the lock boxes, we have that activated for everybody, so that there's a time limit that if they don't close it within a certain amount of time, and or they don't respond, I think is another one, after it sends it back to them. Like, there's two different safety things that are there. So, you know, we don't talk about safety enough, like, in this industry at all. It should be an everyday thing, not just a once a month awareness type of situation. So, but yeah, so buyer consultations, do them. Buyer agency agreement, do them. Have the confidence in yourself to be able to articulate your value, so that when you get to the compensation conversation, you don't have to stumble through things, right? Like, you know your worth, and you know that you are there working on, for your client. And at the end of the day, your client is going to respect you even more for doing that and doing your due diligence. Because if you're doing that much due diligence now, imagine how you're going to be handling the transaction, which is the largest purchase of their life, right? So, well, thanks for joining today, guys. We'll chat next time. So good seeing you, Ashley, and see you later.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please like, subscribe, and share with others. Stay connected for more genuine insights and strategies to boost your real estate career on Facebook, or check out our website. We'll see you next time.